because we got the alternative energy. Right. On nuclear free autonomy.
And welcome to the Radioactive Show, produced at the studios of 3CR Melbourne and heard nationally on the Community Radio Network.
Hello and welcome to the Radioactive Show. I'm Michaela and today we'll be taking a look at some of the research and actions around military spending on this continent as we mark the beginning of the month-long Global Days of Action on Military Spending, initiated by the International Peace Bureau. We'll hear today from Mercedes and Jacob from the group Renegade Activists, who research and educate on Australia's role in the arms industry, and first up from Jamie, the co-convener of the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network Geelong and Vic Southwest, and member of Defend Peace Geelang.
Jamie, thank you so much for joining us on the Radioactive Show. I initially reached out because I saw some of the actions that you've been involved with across the last couple of weeks. Tell us what you've been up to of late.
Well, thanks for having me, Michaela. It's always a pleasure. Recently, some of us were involved in a roof occupation at Moran Precision Engineering, located in the old Ford factory in Geelong. And that was part of a bigger campaign called Weapons Out of Everywhere, which was initiated by Wage Peace, and a heap of other organisations collaborated with Wage Peace to carry out kind of three waves of action over a period of months. To bring attention and focus to the F-35 program, the manufacturing of F-35 parts on this continent and the export of them. So the first wave was like back in, I think, about October last year. There was a week of action decentralized all around the country, about 18 different actions that was kind of centrally coordinated, but groups were acting autonomously and collaboratively. And so in Geelong, we just walked into the compound of Morand. The gate was open. We just walked in broad daylight and had a banner and did a bit of chanting and stuff. And then when the police moved us on, we continued outside the compound. We didn't get moved on from there. And we also dropped a banner from a shopping centre in central Geelong, again in broad daylight, that said, "Miles lies, children die," something like that. I can't quite remember. But, of course, warmonger Richard Miles, Defence Minister, is our local MP. So we're always targeting him for his complicity in warmongering and specifically in the genocide in Palestine. Then the second wave of action was in early December, and that was centralised in Newcastle, Newey, Mullumbimba, because there's a multitude of kind of companies that are manufacturing F-35 parts there. The F-35 is a strike fighter jet made by Lockheed Martin, US company, that Israel is using to bomb Gaza and Lebanon and pretty much every other country in Southwest Asia. And Israel and the US are using the F-35 to bomb Iran now. So they've got several manufacturers there in Niue, and they've got Pat Conroy, the Minister for Defence Industry. They've got Lockheed Martin there. So that was kind of a centralised thing. And then over the last month, we've kind of had a month of action with different groups doing different things at different times, including part of the most recent wave of action has been a campaign against Thai Airways, because Declassified Australia uncovered months ago now that F-35 parts were being transported directly from Gadigal, Sydney, to Israel on Thai Air passenger planes, and at least 71 occasions that has happened. A number of actions were created to raise awareness of that, including a fabulous action at Federation Square in Nam, which involves some great street theatre and props and so on. And the Instagram reel that was made of that just went absolutely viral, got picked up in Thailand, was the thing in the end that prompted Thai Air to make a public statement that they were doing everything by the book and so on. It just became huge. And so that's fabulous. And we still want people to send off emails to the Thai Air execs, and they can go to the Wage Peace Instagram and into the bio or the link tree to find out how to do that. And the other component of that, the third and final wave of this campaign was drawing attention to the Defence Department officials and the ministers they report to, who are responsible for approving and signing these export permits for these parts to go to Israel. And so there's four of them. There's Hugh Jeffrey, Knuckles Deeble, and the other guy is Greg Moriarty, who until very recently was the Secretary of the Department of Defense and is now the ambassador to the United States. So we want to see all of them and the ministers they report to, Miles Conroy and so on, prosecuted in The Hague for war crimes. So there's been a heap of action around that's been happening. So it's been very busy.
Fantastic. And do you feel like there's a good awareness growing in the community with all of this activity going on?
More broadly, yes, in terms of certainly all of the some media have picked it up. That's always helpful for getting the message out there. And certainly the social media is doing really, really well with huge numbers of views. And when the numbers are really huge, I think we can be confident it's not just the, anti-militarist activists who are looking at it. I think, it's going broader than that. So yeah, we're confident that people are becoming more aware.
Yeah.
I think people are also becoming more interested as Donald Trump becomes more erratic and people realize that it's not a great idea for the this country to be in any sort of alliance with the US.
Yeah.
And of course now with the bombing of Iran, it's really brought it home to people because of petrol prices. And once petrol prices go up, everything goes up. Everything that needs to be transported goes up in cost. So it's having a very, very direct impact. All these wars that are happening overseas and a long way away, very direct impact on people here now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we also want people to send off the emails to those defence officials, and they're also available on the Wage Peace Instagram bio and link tree. In terms of coming up, just a couple of things, if I can, that I'd like to just give a bit of a shout out to. In Geelong, we've been doing Peak Hour for Peace in Palestine every Friday night, and this Friday night it will be 2 years since we started doing that. So we say 2 years too long. We shouldn't have to be doing it, for 2 years, but I think for such a small group, that's quite an achievement. And we just hope we don't get rained out this Friday and that we can go ahead and make a big deal of it. And then the other thing I want to give a shout out to is the Paper Boats for Gaza campaign. So there's a flotilla, another aid flotilla, and a number of Australians participating in that flotilla that will be heading off later this month, we think. And the idea with the Paper Boats for Gaza is to involve communities in making some paper boats, and then when the flotilla is intercepted, to have an event where you release those boats into a body of water. So there's an Instagram site called Louda, LOUDDA, and there's information on there. We're just setting up some dates for boat making, paper boat making, and then it will be on our Instagram, which is Palestine Actions Geelong and West Vic.
Excellent. That's fantastic. Was there anything else that you want to add about what's happening down Geelong Way with the military manufacturing precinct and that expansion?
Yeah, the other piece of interesting news for Geelong is that Lockheed Martin, who currently is using a warehouse at Avalon Airport, is going to build a factory at Avalon where it intends to produce missiles. So all of that defence land around Avalon Airport, it seems to be being used as a military industrial manufacturing site. And it's just going to grow and grow, which is terrible for Geelong because it makes our economy more and more dependent on war.
And so are they being given space there, or they're renting that from the Defense Department? Like, it seems like that is public land that's being used for private enterprise.
Yeah, I think making the distinction between the Department of Defense as public and weapons manufacturing as private is that distinction is really blurred now. The Department of Defense is up to its neck in weapons manufacturing. The Albanese government is up to its neck in subsidizing weapons manufacturing. So that distinction is just becoming more and more blurred. I don't know the actual arrangement. I imagine it'll be like a 99-year lease kind of arrangement or something like that, but it's a bit of a as I yeah, it's just very blurred now. They're all in it together.
Yes, well, that's the thing. There's the revolving door between politics and big business, and a lot of the time politicians are just setting themselves up for their post-political career.
Career. That's right. That's what, yeah, they do it all the time. It's like corruption. It shouldn't be allowed. Absolutely should not be allowed. Their insider knowledge, their contacts and connections, it's just corruption, pure and simple.
Too many prisons and not enough schools.
You're tuned to The Radioactive Show, produced in the studios of 3CR and broadcast across the continent thanks to the Community Radio Network. We've just been speaking with Jamie, and to check out those groups, you can find IPAN Geelong Vic Southwest on social media, and also Defend Peace Jilang, that's DJILANG, the Aboriginal word for that area, or via the Independent Peaceful Australian Network website, ipan.org.au, and wagepeaceau.org. Next up, we'll hear from Jacob and Mercedes, lead researchers with the group Renegade Activists, to talk about military spending and the difficulty in quantifying that in Australia when we have a whole-of-government approach to the expansion of the military-industrial complex.
Thank you so much, Jacob and Mercedes, for joining us on The Radioactive Show. Tell us about what Renegade Activists are up to at the moment.
We're ongoing involved in the Palestine support work, obviously. There's a rallies coming up for Prisoners Day and a rally coming up for Nakba in May. We're involved in that. We just basically tried to keep the issues alive, doing the research and plugging that research into other campaigns.
Yeah, most definitely. I guess as part of Renegade Activists, my work and research has been focused on more recently, like particularly the F-35 supply chains and kind of, you know, digging into the financial and contractual data around that and Australian companies' involvement, in particular as sole source company suppliers for that supply chain. But I think it expands out to more broad militarism and looking at, you know, companies like Lockheed Martin and their involvement in manufacturing missiles, of course, AUKUS and the nuclear submarines, and everything that is adjoining that. Also, yeah, there is a panel coming up next Thursday, the 16th, at the Blue Room in the Multicultural Hub, War of Public Housing. And so I guess in light of, you know, looking at military spending, the focus of that panel discussion will be about military spending as opposed to the defunding of essential services like housing. And in here in Melbourne, with the recent announcements that 44 flats are going to be demolished. So an exploration of that in the panel discussion.
Excellent. At the moment, we're seeing this huge increase in the number of wars and armed conflicts, probably the highest it's been since World War II, and that's increasing in line with military spending. Australia's so-called defence budget for 2025-26 is looking to be $59 billion, with aims announced to increase that to over $100 billion by 2033. Yeah,
what the hell is going on?
Yeah, what the hell is going on?
Well, it's hard to quantify. I mean, that $60 billion, it's 59 point something billion, so I'm 60 billion just to you know, round it, is made up primarily the Department of Defence, and also I think $2.5 billion off the top of my head for this ASD, the Signals Directorate, and about 400,000 for the Submarine Corporation. But that also leaves out a lot of spending. Like, it doesn't touch on veteran affairs. for argument's sake. And there'd be an argument that a big part at the moment and ongoing of our DFAT, our foreign affairs budget, is going towards war. There's no question of this. Like, we've had a shift this century that I've noticed and was elucidated in the last Strategic Defence Review, but it's been going on for longer than this. And that is where it used to be the defence budget was this isolated part of national spending. Nowadays, that's just a part of it. We also need to look, for example, where this century, increased military production. Like, we're making parts, as Mercedes said, the supply chain for the F-35, but all kinds, every single last weapon system the United States is using in the execution of its wars either has some components sourced from Australia or components made from raw materials sourced in Australia or is being used through communication systems based in Australia. We're integral. So all those different areas need to be included in the defence budget. Like, for example, with the manufacturing process, the federal government and the state government are ploughing millions and millions every year into supporting Australian industry. Now, the industries we're supporting are the defence, the military, the war-making industries, but they're not included in the defence budget. We're putting all this money into fast-tracking critical minerals and rare earths. And they're primarily, I mean, they'll tell you it's so that we can look at cat videos on YouTube ever faster, but they're primarily used by the military. We're building data centres all over the country that have a big use by the military, and none of that expenditure is included in the defence budget. It's what they called in the strategic review a whole-of-government approach. And that's, I mean, you look at education.
Yeah.
There are education programs designed to fast-track STEM students into military corporations. So part of the defence budget. You look at the Indigenous budget, where they're using Indigenous contractors to build bases in Northern Australia. It's part of the defence budget. Every area. So it's hard to quantify exactly what the defence budget is.
I would like to just add to that, I guess, in terms of adding to Jacob's point on that it is across a vast cross-section. So it's, you know, it might be $59 billion as a defence budget, but as an example, like the Future Made in Australia policy, Albanese's policy, which I think is a $23 billion policy, $7 billion of that is for the critical minerals production tax credits. And so $7 billion of that Future Made in Australia, which kind of from the outset looks like a good thing, you know, to boost manufacturing, but critical minerals as necessitated for the military industrial complex and US militarism, which is about what the critical minerals deal that Albanese and Trump signed last year. So they're essentially giving a chop out with tax credits to private companies to dig up critical minerals to shore up supply chains for the US. And that's $7 billion of a $23 billion fund, which is not included in defence. And the STEM in Schools program, I think it was just last week or the week before, the Albanese government launched, it's called Propel, the Australian Submarine Scholarship Program. So that's $15.8 million to support students to fast track them and support their entry into the nuclear submarine industry. It starts at $59 billion. Also, it's looking at where is the money going? Like, it's not actually, you know, you go to the shop and pay whatever you do for 2 litres of milk and you come home with your milk. It's kind of this really, the military industrial complex and the way that the companies operate is really just moving money around to their mates because, you know, we had a look at a couple of weeks ago, the Boxer combat reconnaissance vehicles, the first one after 8 years rolled off the production line of it from Rheinmetall in Queensland after 8 years. And this is a major defence project. They're saying that this is going to be a sovereign manufactured combat reconnaissance vehicle for the army. It's 2/3 into the, I think it's $5.2 billion budget. Might be more than that. The figure has evaded me right now. But after 8 years, the first vehicle that still includes components from Germany, from Rheinmetall, which is a German company with an Australian subsidiary, and they're two-thirds of the way into the budget, and there's supposed to be another 200 vehicles, combat reconnaissance vehicles, coming with no time frame or end in sight. And so you're kind of like, that just doesn't add up. And so, you know, where is that money going? And I think when the government, both sides of government, talk about military capability, it's not actually about an end product. It's about having the capability to move that production in times of war, like now, where Australia's just sent missiles to the US for the Iran war. And that's what capability means in this instance, of the ability to redirect industry to the needs of the US as Australia seeks to continually maintain relevance as a sub-imperial power, and particularly under AUKUS.
And the thing I'd like to add to that is, putting aside for the moment, as difficult as it is for us three in particular and our listeners in general, the morality of the military, the fact that we're spending all this money on what is, in effect, more and more and more sophisticated ways of killing people. Putting aside that immorality, it's not working. We have an aircraft carrier, a US aircraft carrier, that's sitting outside the Gulf because it can't be operated in the Gulf. It's too narrow. And even then, their whole toilet system has blown out. We have all the American submarines can't be used in the Gulf, and neither can they be used in the Red Sea. We've got these boxes. Now, we're talking about the defence of Australia, or we're talking about invading Iran. What the use are hundreds of armoured vehicles? Are we going to put them in a line across the Brisbane line? We're building submarines that are, you know, we had, for example, a US submarine, a Los Angeles class, with Australian sailors on it, take down an Iranian ship last month, the Dina. And they claimed that that was the first time a surface ship had been sunk by a US submarine since the end of the Second World War. So, okay, glad. I'm glad they're not taking down ships. However, when you think of the absolute billions and billions and billions of dollars that the United States has spent on the submarine program, and submarines are specifically designed to take down surface ships. So what they're telling us is, after all these billions of dollars, they've taken out one ship in 70-something years. And it was an unarmed ship on its way back from band practice, basically, from a tattoo exercise in India. So even if we thought it's a good thing to build all these weapons to kill more and more people with, they're not actually working. We've got US admirals in the Pentagon complaining that their weapon systems aren't working because they're in contractual obligations to people like Lockheed Martin. They can't even change their own tires because they need. So it's not even about building weapons to kill people. It's about working out more ways to transfer money from one part of capital to another part of capital, and from the Commonwealth to the largest capitalist organisations in the world. Because our whole concept, when we look at the war in Ukraine, the war against Yemen, the war against Palestine, war in Iran, the old model of more and more sophisticated killing machines is just not working anymore. Even by, and this is a conversation that's happening within the military industrial complex itself. What do we do about this? All we're doing is spending more and more and more money, transferring money from one part of capital to the other.
Yeah, and I think that is exemplified by this new Lockheed Martin facility at Avalon, which is obviously just down the road from us. When they announced it, they were saying it's underscore Avalon's critical role in supporting Australia's sovereign defence capabilities. But I think we can see that's absolutely not what is happening.
To be honest, I've probably looked more at Hanwha's facility at Avalon, and that's another project like the Boxer CRVs, where Hanwha is a South Korean company that's got the contract to build their Huntsman and the Redback infantry fighting vehicle. And many of the listeners might be aware that that is the contract that Elbit Systems has, the $917 million contract to provide a component on the Redback infantry fighting vehicle. Still yet again to receive one, but Hanwha has just completed stage two of the building of that facility, and yet there's not been a vehicle that's run off the production line. This is not an argument to say they need to be better at creating these weapons that kill people, but I think it's also to recognize that a large part of the building of this infrastructure is largely for export for the companies that run it. So the stage two of the production is for export to South Korea and to European customers of Hanwha Aerospace and Defense, very much like Lockheed Martin will be with the GMLRS, but they've just opened a facility in Port Wakefield that will have the capability to manufacture 4,000 of these. They're called guided multiple launch rocket systems, which of course, given if it's Lockheed Martin, they're owned by Lockheed Martin and they're for export, or because of AUKUS, they then are domestically available to the US when it decides to illegally attack Iran or Venezuela or any other country that it decides to. And I think that this capability for export, it's always for export, but because the defense export figures and permit systems is that the permits are signed and they last however many years, 5 years. It's self-reported estimations on how much those exports cost of whatever it is for. And then once they're ticked, with it, whatever happens within that five-year period, say, I'm not sure, I'm sure there's a variation in the times that these permits, the expiration dates of these permits, but that's signed. You've got $100 billion worth of export permits that have been passed by the Australian government in the last financial year, which is self-reported by the companies themselves. And so I guess on paper, that looks really good. It's like, look how much money we're making in exports and we're only spending this much in developing it. But that's, the government doesn't actually track real exports. So there's no mechanism within the Australian government to track actual defence exports as opposed to the permits that have been granted.
Sure. And on top of that, to come back to Lockheed Martin, they're also... The thing that Avalon is a factory for assembling guided or multiple launch rocket systems. A couple of years ago, and we covered it at a Friday rave, the Australian American governments and the UK government formed a trilateral defence export community where we no longer need permits to send weapons to the United States or to the United Kingdom. Now, under pre-existing agreements, anything that happened in trade, but leaving the UK out for a moment, anything that happened in trade between Australia and the US was one-sided, because if we bought something from the US, we had no right to further export it to a third country, whereas that restriction wasn't placed on the US. So they could purchase things in Australia and send it wherever they like with absolutely no mechanism for the Australian government to object. And then we also had a situation where a couple of years ago, with the agreement of the Australian government, the US Department of Defence, Department of War now, whatever you want to call it, has recognised Australia as a domestic source. So it does it, when something's made in America, made in the USA, it could be made here. It could be made at the Lockheed Martin facility in Avalon. We don't, there's no way of knowing that, because of the mechanism Mercedes just outlined. There's no way of knowing where anything came from. We're one global or integrated pool with the United States. Now, the specific thing about the multiple launch rocket systems, for a start, they're solid fuel rockets, which is a whole issue that while we've been talking about the war on Iran and the war on Gaza and Lebanon, Yemen and Somalia and Sudan, hasn't been discussed. And that's the effect of climate change by these solid fuel rockets. Okay, that's just by the by, with no time to go into that today. But The other problem has been we got a Pentagon report from before October the 7th, 2023, that was worried that they were running out of weapons. They were running out of missiles. Now, that's now public knowledge after the war on Gaza, after the Ukraine, now in Iran. The US is running out of rockets. So when we're looking at things like the fast tracking of the Lockheed Martin facility in Avalon and the one in Port Wakefield, is it Mercedes? Yeah, and another one in Orchard Hills in Sydney, and I think they've got one another one in Queensland, and that's just Lockheed Martin. Then you've got Northrop Grumman, you've got Nyiowa, you've got all these other ones creating interceptor rockets and 155 solid fuel rocket motors. These are coming online so quickly and being fast tracked because the US is running out of missiles. They need to replenish them as fast as ever. So this is what's behind, they call it the teaming agreement with Avalon Airport.
And I think it's important to also look at the location of Avalon Airport. It's, of course, in Richard Miles' electorate. He's Gormlessness himself, who's the defence minister, still to the defence minister.
He's still the
defence
minister.
And also the recent upgrades to Point Wilson, which is a military port that just lies on the coastal side of Avalon. So you've got Hanwha, there's a facility there. You've got Kemring, which is also in Lara, which produces a lot of the explosive components and countermeasures. You've got the Viva Energy in Geelong, which is the company that produces toluene for munitions. And so you've got Point Wilson, which is a military port. You've got right next to Avalon Airport. And you've got multiple companies like Morand that are operating in Geelong, Kemring, Viva Energy, which has the explosive chemicals production at a raw material level. So this is sort of developing this area of Richard Miles's electorate. And there's also, Quickstep and all of these composite materials companies that are developing out of Deakin University in Richard Miles's electorate to become really a defence hub, which I'm sure Jamie would have spoken about.
Yeah, so this is all part of the military-industrial complex need to keep producing weapons. And when you look, for example, after everything that's happened in Iran over the last month and a bit, when you look at the peace agreement, that so-called ceasefire that's been apparently, some say yes, some say no, agreed to the other day, America has, with all its firepower, with all its air superiority, with all its missiles, has not been able to impose its will on Iran. Now, as I say, putting aside questions of morality for a moment, the way that we've expended all this money and the way we've retooled, not just in Australia, but in the United States itself, we've retooled our industry as nothing more than a supply chain for the military industry. And it is ineffective. Now, having said that, they know that. They're top economists. Their people know that it's not working. So why are they doing it?
I will just note the Australian Department of Defence doesn't actually have a chief economist.
It doesn't surprise me.
No, absolutely not.
And neither now do we have oversight committees. Basically, the audit office has announced a couple of weeks ago that they're no longer going to report on major projects of the Department of Defence, because every report they've been coming out with has been talking about how far behind they are, how over budget they are, how useless they are. So what's their response to this? We'll stop producing reports. Mm-hmm. And in fact, we'll produce a report which is twice as big as the report you're not producing to explain why we don't need to produce a report. It's like Monty Python can have nothing on this. It is stupid. But we know that they're not stupid. So why are they doing it? And to my mind, it's just part of the ongoing dictum of capitalist economies to acquire more and more of the world's wealth into fewer and fewer hands. And it doesn't matter whether it's about war or what it's about. The war is now on the people who are having their mortgages lost, who are having public housing torn down, who have got education cuts, who have got health cuts, who are being cut in every facet of society for the one and only one reason, and that is to provide more and more funds to a military industrial complex whose aim seems to be to get more and more of the wealth into its pockets without needing to justify itself with any significant military victories. It's look at, as I say, putting the morality of it aside, it's batshit crazy.
Yeah, you look at the budget of the United Nations for this year's 3.45 billion, which is just nothing. And yeah, so maybe in the final couple of minutes before we wrap up, what's to be done?
What is to be done?
Oh, the age-old question. I think there is a in understanding what the role of the Australian government and its departments is actually within the global military industrial complex. And it's not actually of decision makers, it's more of management, and not management by governance, but it's sort of legislated. The Australian bipartisan Australian government has legislated itself into a position of subservience to the US and to the UK, so that the Australian government is saying nothing or just trying to hide, or they kind of this moniker that they always say was like, I'm not going to get into the details of that. It's like, well, why not? It's like, well, you actually can't. Either you don't know, or you don't actually have any power of governance, because you're in a position that you are just following orders and then replicating those same mechanisms on Pacific Island nations by developing security treaties with Pacific Island nations as a sub-imperial power, which is undermining the sovereignty of those places. So what is the actual role of the Australian government in this? And it's just like a to sign away public funds to mates and corporations, because of course we all know with the revolving door, anyone in government, they've signed a good deal and they'll have a nice seat on a boardroom at Lockheed Martin or Elbit or any of these major weapons companies, or they'll have a consulting, they'll be able to leverage their positions and the mates that they've rubbed shoulders with to start a consultancy firm like Christopher Pyne.
So what we need to do is start looking at a movement-wide understanding of where we are that is different to where we are last century. And unfortunately, a lot of our work in the oppositional movement is still working as if we're in, the 90s or the 80s, if not the 70s, and we're no longer there. We need to look at Australia not as its own economic model, but in the broader context of where we are as part of a sub-imperial power that is, with an emphasis, more of an emphasis on sub than imperial, dare I say.
And I guess on, just to, I guess, add to that, but I think that Australia's role as a sub-imperial power and the question of sovereignty exists as a colonial power as well. And that, okay, how is that sovereignty actually being assumed? And without a reckoning with the truth of genocide on this country, Australia doesn't have sovereignty. There's that's it's a castle built on sand. But I'll just add on what is to be done. I think that all of this talk of defense spending and how much military spending there is all levels of government and within defense industry itself, is it's for shoring up supply chain vulnerability. And so there is supply chain vulnerability, and that is the opening for us, is where there's supply chain vulnerability means that there's bottlenecks, means that there's ways that we can impact on the ground in a material way how these things are operating, that will affect the movement and the flow of that capital through this industry. And I think that's, that's as a more immediate, I guess, on the ground thing that we can do is they're telling us there's vulnerabilities, and so let's take that up and take that on board.
Yeah, those vulnerabilities at the moment are particularly in the critical minerals and rare earth sector, and they're building mines over here. And it's not just about militarism, it's not just about spending, it's about protecting the very biosphere that we all rely on to live and breathe.
Too many weapons and not enough school. Too many weapons and not enough.
That's all for today's show. We've been speaking with Jacob and Mercedes. You can learn more from them at renegadeactivist.org and via their weekly radio show, A Friday Rave. All the episodes are available at 3cr.org.au/Friday Rave. There's plenty of online activities for the Global Days of Action on Military Spending. Go to demilitarize.org. And you can add your activities to their calendar of events or sign the appeal. For our Melbourne listeners, the event War or Public Housing, Resist the Push to Defund Essential Services is on Thursday, 16th of April from 6 till 8:30 p.m. at the Multicultural Hub, 506 Elizabeth Street, Melbourne. That's opposite the Queen Vic Market. And it's free, but register for entry. And we'll link to all of these in our podcast notes, which you can find at 3cr.org.au/radioactive. Thanks to our fantastic guests, Jamie, Jacob and Mercedes. Thanks to the Nuclear Free Collective at Friends of the Earth Melbourne for their ongoing support. And you can sign up for updates at melbournefoe.org.au/nuclear. Thanks to the Community Radio Network for getting our show out to radio stations across the continent. Thank you for listening, and join us again next week for more news and views on nuclear peace and energy issues. This the game, gotta navigate your aim now. Through the mud, through the lover when it rains down. Wash the blood, watch and wash the blood now. Seek light, aim lock, how you hold it down. This the game, gotta navigate your aim now. Through the mud, through the lover when it rains down. Wash the blood, I watch and wash the blood now. Seek light, aim lock, how you hold it down.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.